Before relating this to you, I'd like to offer a brief acknowledgement and a quick disclaimer. First, I need to thank Ray Davis, a listener in the Sydney, Australia area. He and I were chatting via Twitter when the news came in about Gene Cernan's passing. I was lamenting his loss when Ray said, "It sounds like you have a story there." That's when I realized I did. Secondly, I need to defer to our historian, David Vanderhoof, and friend of the show, NASA historian, Bill Barry, regarding any inaccuracies. Some of the history I'll relate here may be apocryphal, but it's how I remember it. So without further ado, here's what I call, "God Bless You, Gene Cernan." Not sure what to say exactly. The last man on the moon just died. Now both the first and last are gone. We're fortunate enough to have some in-betweeners left, six to be precise. But these men are both literally and figuratively a dying breed. Yes, Gene Cernan is dead. At just less than 83 years old, the last man on the moon has left Earth for his final flight. This one goes west. I didn't really expect his passing to affect me like this, but it did, and does. Another childhood hero is gone, and one whose name may not be as well known as some others, but a man I've always admired and respected. Sure, I was saddened when we lost John Glenn and Neil Armstrong. Jeez, I was upset when Wally Schirra passed. I mean, I'd once met Wally Schirra, had him autograph a box of Actifed for me, which made him laugh out loud. But still, there's something about Gene Cernan's passing that just leaves me melancholy. I always wanted to meet Gene Cernan, had hoped to do so one day. Everything I ever heard about him from people that knew him said he was a real mensch, a stand-up guy, a pilot's pilot. I heard him talk, watched him on TV. He knew he was good at what he did, and he also knew he was lucky. He suffered a bit from survivor's guilt. He felt awful that his compadres from flight school were flying off carriers and sometimes losing their lives in Vietnam, while he had a cushy job with NASA. Cushy job? Yeah, sure. He started his career in 1958 when he became a naval aviator, flying the FJ-4 Fury, which if you think of as a carrier version of the F-86 Sabre, you wouldn't be too far off. After the Fury, he moved to the A-4 Skyhawk in attack squadrons 126 and 113. When he finished there in Miramar, he then completed his education in 1963 at the U.S. Naval Postgraduate School with a Master's of Science degree in Aeronautical Engineering. It was then he became a part of Astronaut Group 3, the 1963 astronaut class that included Buzz Aldrin, Al Bean, and Michael Collins, among 10 others. Cushy job. He flew Gemini 9A with Tom Stafford in command, a disaster of a mission in so many ways, but one we learned a lot from. The prime crew, Elliot C. and Charlie Bassett, died in a plane crash, leaving the backup crew, Stafford and Cernan, up for the flight. The first launch attempt was scrubbed due to a computer glitch, and they lost a launch window. Then their docking target's payload fairing failed to separate, so the planned rendezvous and docking had to be aborted. And then there was the EVA, a spacewalk. Gene Cernan completed a 2-hour EVA that almost killed him. His spacesuit cooling system just couldn't keep up with his body temperature. His visor fogged up. He couldn't see. He was only able to get through it by regularly clearing small parts of his visor with the tip of his nose. At one point, his heartbeat rose to 180 beats per minute. Overheated, and with a racing pulse, the flight surgeon, monitoring from the ground, was sure Cernan was going to pass out. But he didn't. But do you know what the bravest thing of all was? Remember, this was only the USA's second spacewalk, and was in fact the third ever in history. Cernan knew going into it that when he left the tiny cabin of the Gemini spacecraft, and I mean tiny, think a bit smaller than the front seat of an old Volkswagen Beetle. Well, Cernan knew that he might not make it back in. He and Tom Stafford also knew that NASA might not survive the bad publicity if Stafford had to cut Cernan loose to save himself and the spacecraft. So they agreed ahead of time that if Cernan could not get back into the capsule, they would make the reentry with the astronaut still tethered by his umbilical, even though it would have resulted with them both dying. Talk about the right stuff. Some cushy job, huh? Cernan flew Apollo 10 as lunar module pilot, paired again with Tom Stafford as mission commander. John Young was a command module pilot. This was the flight before Apollo 11, the first one to land on the moon. The mission's primary objective was to test the lunar module and calibrate its guidance system by bringing it less than 9 miles from the lunar surface. There was a crazy part to this mission, too. NASA knew what hotshot pilots both Gene Cernan and Tom Stafford were, and being that they were so close, given the opportunity, they might just land on the moon. So NASA purposely short-fueled the LEM. NASA made sure that these pilots knew if they set down on the moon, they wouldn't have enough fuel to return to the command module on Earth. Thinking about it gives me shivers and makes me smile all at the same time. Then came Apollo 17, Gene Cernan's last spaceflight and our final flight to the moon. For 3 days, Gene Cernan and Jack Schmidt lived on the moon, walked on the moon, drove on the moon, and prospected on the moon. For 3 days! And then they left. Gene Cernan's footsteps are the last ones on the moon. But before leaving, he did something very special. Before climbing into the lunar module for the last time, before saying the final words of man spoken from the moon, "We leave as we came, and God willing, as we shall return, with peace and hope for all mankind." Before saying that, he wrote with his finger in the dust on the moon the initials TDC for his daughter, Teresa Dawn Cernan. Gene Cernan witnessed and was a major part of the greatest days of NASA. But then he lived and died during what may be some of NASA's worst times. I just feel awful about that. Look at how far we've come and how far we've drifted back. No one has been to the moon in 45 years. The USA no longer has manned spaceflight capability. We're back to being happy when rockets don't explode on a launch pad trying to lift a satellite into orbit. It's like we're back in the 1950s again. And what did we get from the space program, some ask? Sure, those who depreciate NASA say, "I use butter anyway, I don't need Teflon," or, "I don't need a computer in my pocket so exponentially more powerful than those found on the Apollo missions that it's not worth comparing." But think about some of the other things we have. Personally, I've had several magnetic resonance imaging scans, better known as MRIs, that have allowed doctors to see the tissue and joints inside my body without cutting me open. Likewise, I've had joint repairs and soft tissue repairs completed by doctors without opening me up. For heaven's sakes, I've watched along on color high-definition TV as a doctor shoved a tiny camera up my, well, shall we say, fluid into some highly restricted airspace to check to see if I had colon cancer, and while there, removed anything that might become cancerous. So we can say that NASA and the space program has helped keep us alive and well. Gene Cernan fought to get us back on the moon. He fought for more NASA funding. He testified before Congress. He wrote books. He made films. He did what he could. But it was beyond even his abilities. Here we are in a world where the USA has no manned space capability. But thank you, Gene Cernan. I know if I thanked you in person, you'd say, "I was just doing my job." I'm sure of that. But your job meant a lot to me, and still does. Thanks for doing your job. And in this, your final flight, please keep an eye on us if you can. For the Airplane Geeks here in Portland, Maine, this is your main man, Micah.